EM Guidewire, hard-hitting emergency medicine from Carolina's Medical Center.
Welcome back to EM Guidewire's Intern Nuggets podcast. We are once again coming to you from the J. Lee Garvey Innovation Studio at Carolina's Emergency Medicine Residency in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hey everyone, this is Teresa Crow, PGY1.
And this is Kendrick Lim, PGY1. Or should I say PGY1.5? I can't believe we're halfway through intern year. Wow, time flies. How have you been, Dr. Crow?
It really has flown by. I feel like we were just day one interns yesterday. It's been really great. You know, it really has kept me busy, but I've enjoyed everything I've gotten to do. I've definitely been trying to prioritize finding a good work-life balance, though. Easier said than done as an intern, but I really took what one of our third years, Dr. Destiny Folk, said during our intern orientation to heart. Many of y'all listening to the podcast are probably familiar with her. She said to find three things to focus on maintaining in residency. For me, this has been having a weekly date night with my husband, prioritizing running and working out, and spending 15 minutes a day outside in some capacity, even if that just means sitting and having my coffee in the backyard or playing with my dog. This has been so important for my mental health and helping me feel more like a human, especially after night shifts.
That is some fantastic advice. My three things were getting enough sleep, exercising regularly, and being grateful for what I get to do. Dr. Folk's advice has certainly come in handy, especially on some of the busier rotations. And speaking of rotations, which one has been your favorite? And no, you can't say the ED blocks.
You read my mind. I'd have to say that anesthesia ultrasound was probably my favorite off-service rotation. I didn't really have very much ultrasound experience prior to residency, and we have such great faculty here that I learned really quickly. I got over 200 ultrasounds in a month. Plus, it was awesome getting in some reps tubing patients on anesthesia. What about you?
That's a tough one. I'd have to say either ultrasound or ICU. I really enjoyed both, and I can definitely see why ED docs love to toss on that ultrasound probe. There are so many fantastic bedside, point-of-care ultrasound applications that translate into clinical practice. But I have to say, it was also super interesting to rotate on the cardiology service and see what happens on the other side of a STEMI. You've already done your cardiology rotation, right?
Yeah, I was lucky to start off with cardiology in August, and I have to say, I don't care how much you learned about ECGs in medical school, it's hard not to panic and be a deer in the headlights when someone throws one in front of you and asks you to interpret it.
Yeah, me too, literally. Rate, rhythm, access, can I just use the computer interpretation? Oh, wait, did I just say that? I would never. I do have to say, we are so lucky to spend part of our cardiology month learning about ECGs from the Dr. Pendle Myers. He's our fantastic ECG guru who is revolutionizing the field of ECG interpretation with his new mobile application, the Queen of Hearts. This app is an artificial intelligence trained to identify occlusive myocardial ischemia, and I feel like every lecture from him is gold. Unfortunately, teaching ECG interpretation over a podcast is challenging since you really need to be looking at them, but there are some excellent learning points on this topic that we can go over today. We recently discussed the management of atrial fibrillation and atrial flutter at our weekly conference, and it reminded me of how important it is to have a solid foundation on these topics, especially since this squiggles its way into our department so often.
Okay, here's a quick refresher on these infamous arrhythmias. Both atrial fibrillation and atrial flutter are two common types of supraventricular tachycardias, which is just a fancy way of saying an arrhythmia that originates above the ventricles. Atrial fibrillation is characterized by uncoordinated atrial activation, leading to an irregular and usually fast ventricular response. The ECG will show absent P waves with irregular QRS waves. You'll often find that these patients have an irregular pulse. It is considered AFib with RVR when the rate is above 100 to 110.
Atrial flutter is similar, but it is usually caused by a single macro reentrant rhythm within the atria. So the ventricular rhythm itself is usually regular, and the ECG will have a distinctive sawtooth pattern of inverted flutter waves in leads 2, 3, and AVF, as well as upright flutter waves in V1.
By the way, if you need a refresher on what these ECGs look like, I encourage you to look up these ECGs and walk through the different patterns for AFib and aflutter. If you want to read about some ECG pearls, you can check out the EM Guidewire's monthly ECG section brought to you by CMC graduates and our very own cardiologist, Dr. Laszlo Littman. And now, on to the fun stuff. What do we do when these patients get to the ED?
These patients can present with many different symptoms, including, but not limited to, palpitations, dyspnea, presyncopal episodes, chest pain, and dizziness. I like to think of AFib and aflutter as a physiologic response and manifestation of an underlying pathology, similar to when a patient is tachycardic. there is an abundance of disease processes that can push a patient into AFib or a flutter. For instance, is the patient infected and septic? Is thyrotoxicosis contributing to the patient's presentation? Could there be an underlying pulmonary pathology such as pneumonia or pulmonary embolism? What about substance use such as alcohol or cocaine? Or maybe it's an electrolyte abnormality such as hypokalemia or hypomagnesemia. Of course, it can also be something intrinsic to the heart itself, such as hypertension, ischemic heart disease, valvular heart disease, or heart failure.
So many different causes of AFib and A-flutter. We will definitely need a pretty broad workup for these patients who present with new onset of these arrhythmias. I would really consider obtaining a CBC, BNP, magnesium, thyroid studies, possibly an echo, and troponins if you're concerned about cardiac ischemia. Additional labs should be considered depending on the patient's presentation and concern for other underlying causes, such as intoxication or infection, like you mentioned. And when do these patients get defibrillated?
I'm glad you brought that up. In the process of investigating why our patient has AFib or A-flutter, we need to remember that it is vital to determine if the patient is stable or unstable. If they are hemodynamically unstable, in other words, a systolic blood pressure of less than 90, an altered mental status, cardiac ischemia, or severely decompensated heart failure due to the underlying rhythm, and you believe that the rhythm is the primary cause of their hemodynamic instability, then the treatment is actually quite simple. Grab the pads and also grab your tending so that you can perform a synchronized electrical cardioversion, which is the delivery of an electric shock to the heart at the peak of the R wave. Remember to ask yourself why the patient is in AFib. If you think that the patient's AFib is actually a physiologic response to their underlying pathology, then investigating and treating their underlying pathology may be more advantageous than rate controlling them with medications or electricity. This is what makes managing AFib so tricky. For instance, a patient could be in AFib and tacking away with a heart rate of 180 because of their, say, sepsis. And in that case, the AFib may be the only thing that allows the patient to adequately perfuse their organs.
Fantastic point. That is precisely why this topic can be so tricky. You have to think through your individual patient and their underlying physiology. But okay, with all that in mind, let's chat about how we electrically cardiovert the unstable patient. It's essential that we perform a synchronized cardioversion as opposed to an unsynchronized cardioversion. Otherwise, the rhythm can transform into a life-threatening rhythm such as ventricular fibrillation or ventricular tachycardia, and the patient could become pulseless. In that case, it's time to start CPR. If they do convert successfully, you can pat yourself and your team on the back for saving the patient. Go ahead and get your cardiology friends involved for the next steps in management. This will likely involve additional rate and or rhythm control, anticoagulation, and close monitoring, all of which will likely earn them a room in the ICU.
On the other hand, if they fail to convert, you can administer a second dose of cardioversion. At this point, cardiologists should probably be on board and discussing other management options. If the patient is still hypotensive, provide some pressor support with phenylephrine or norepinephrine, consider lowering the patient's heart rate with amiodarone, esmolol, or diltiazem, and of course, continue resuscitation until they hopefully convert.
Whew, sounds like a scary situation.
Oh, for sure. But that's why it's important to be prepared and always know your next step in the algorithm. Now, if they aren't unstable and there's no other underlying etiology for their arrhythmia, then we can consider a few other things. If the patient has no contraindications or risk factor for major bleeding complications, we can start an oral anticoagulation medication to reduce the risk of a cerebrovascular event. What is that thing about rate versus rhythm control that everyone always talks about?
So there are a few mental buckets I like to put these patients in. New AFib, A-flutter, and chronic AFib, A-flutter. We manage these two things very differently. For new onset AFib or A-flutter, the big question is symptom onset. When did the patient start having symptoms? And the magic number that we like to think about is 48 hours. Technically, if the patient's symptoms started less than 48 hours ago, then one could pursue electrical or chemical cardioversion, aka rhythm control. Electrically, this would be a synchronized cardioversion, but this time with proper analgesia and or sedation since the patient is hemodynamically stable, and we don't want to shock a patient with them awake. Chemically, they have many different options, such as amiodarone and flecainide. If you don't know how long they have been in the rhythm or are outside the 48-hour window, then the primary option is to slow the patient's heart rate down, aka rate control. We often reach for calcium channel blockers or beta blockers such as diltiazem or metoprolol. This is most often how we end up managing stable patients, because the reality of patient care is you often can't be sure when someone actually went into the arrhythmia.
That's a great point. you really do want to make sure that the patient has been in AFib or a flutter for more than 48 hours when you convert them, because there is a high risk of a cerebrovascular accident if they have been in the AFib rhythm for a long time and have not been anticoagulated. That's why the approach for AFib is often to either anticoagulate the patient for at least 3 weeks or obtain a TEE, transesophageal echocardiogram, to ensure that the patient does not have any thrombi in their atria. Now, if the patient doesn't respond to oral medications and requires IV medications, or they have unrelenting symptoms, then the patient should likely be admitted for further management. If symptoms resolve with oral medications, then an outpatient follow-up with a cardiology is extremely appropriate. Ultimately, the decision for long-term rate versus rhythm control is a discussion that patients should have with their primary care provider and or cardiologist.
All right. Woo, that was a lot. Let's try to sum that all up now. Our first major point is the pathophysiology and etiology of AFib and atrial flutter. AFib is characterized by irregular atrial activation, leading to an irregular and usually fast ventricular response. A flutter is caused by a single macro reentrant rhythm within the atria. Both conditions are types of supraventricular tachycardias and can be caused by various underlying pathologies, such as infection, thyrotoxicosis, pulmonary issues, substance use, electrolyte abnormalities, or intrinsic heart problems.
And how do we manage that? Consider the underlying cause of AFib. If it's a physiologic response to an underlying pathology, for instance, sepsis, then addressing and treating that root cause would be a lot more advantageous than immediate rate or rhythm control. Determine if the patient is stable or unstable. For unstable patients, for instance, if their systolic blood pressure is less than 90 millimeters of mercury, that are altered or hypotensive, then perform a synchronized electrical cardioversion. And for stable patients, differentiate between new onset and chronic AFib. If symptoms started less than 48 hours ago, consider electrical or chemical cardioversion. If the duration is uncertain or more than 48 hours, focus on rate control with medications like calcium channel blockers or beta blockers.
And finally, for long-term management and considerations, there's a few things that you need to think about. Anticoagulation is crucial, especially if the patient is at risk for stroke. Consider factors like duration of AFib, patient contraindications, and risk of bleeding. New onset AFib may warrant early intervention, while chronic AFib might lean more towards long-term rate control strategies. And individualized patient care is essential. Decisions about long-term rate versus rhythm control should involve discussion with primary care providers or cardiologists. Regular follow-ups and monitoring are key components of ongoing management.
Couldn't have said it better, Dr. Crow. Until next time, dear listeners, keep those ECGs close and your coffee closer. Thank you for joining us at the J. Lee Garvey Innovation Studio at Carolinas Medical Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. Please check out our other podcasts and imaging series. We'll be back for some more intern nuggets soon.
Thanks for listening to EM Guidewire. Go, be awesome today.
CMC out.
This coffee is going to put me in AFib.
It's all right, we know what to do now. We'll fix you right up.
Okay, we got it.
Say that 10 times. Backwards. No.
That was like a tongue twister.
Yeah, I know.